Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
Hello, Devin.
Hello, Alan.
It's week one of the NBA season. We're here. Finally.
Yep.
Well, I assume you guys all watched the game.
Devin, did you watch it all the way through?
I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did watch a decent portion. The Spurs looked really, really good.
Wait, we're talking about the Spurs?
They did.
Oh, you meant the Jazz game.
The Spurs look good too, and we're going to talk about the Spurs and the Warriors and the Cavs in a few minutes, but let's start off with the game that matters to all of us right now, and that's the Jazz versus Lillard and the Trailblazers. Oh my goodness, Lillard and the Trailblazers.
Do you guys remember, it was about a year ago, we were doing these projections of where teams would end up. And you guys were like, oh, the Blazers are going to be terrible. You remember that? That was a good time. Anyways, let's talk about this season.
That was last year. We're not last year anymore. This is this year, Devin. Thank you.
I know, but it's the same Lillard. Cold-blooded.
It did answer one question for me, though. I didn't think the pickup of Evan Turner was that great. And Evan Turner is a bench guy and not a starter. So that changes what I thought they were going to do.
What was he? 1 of 7, I think. And then he ended up with 5 assists. Not bad in the assist category, but really quite horrible otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked what they did by pretty much going small, really. They had Amino and Harkless and Plumlee as their front court. And you know, none of those guys are a center, and Harkless wasn't that great either. It is possible that someone else will be moved into the starting lineup soon.
Crab.
It's only one game.
Crab.
Yeah.
Crab. Pretty much. I mean, Crab.
Crab was great, but I think Crab is going to be groomed to be their sixth man candidate.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. Although, they might have to, simply because if you move Evan Turner permanently, you know, if he's a permanent mainstay on the bench and you've got all your firepower in the starting lineup, you've got nothing off the bench. And really, this is right back to where the Jazz were just the last couple of years, where they had, you know, good starters, but you get into the bench and you get really dry. And so Crab is almost that Alec Burks spark off the bench for them. So I agree. I think they would have to stay that way because he's that. And Harkless was really quiet last night. Aminu started off well, but I don't think Aminu really was heard from the rest of the game either.
Well, he's not a stats guy. Aminu is out there for length and disruption, and Aminu's defense was really good.
Yeah.
You know, as I look at their roster, I would think they'd give serious consideration to putting Ed Davis in there. I kind of like the idea of Ed Davis and Plumlee switching between 4 and 5, have Aminu as a true 3, and then, you know, Lillard and CJ.
And kudos to Plumlee. Plumlee has turned out to be a very valuable addition in that starting lineup for Portland. He is a great passer. He doesn't do a lot of flashy stuff. I mean, a lot of extra stuff. He's there. He passes. He anchors. He's good at what he does. And I think it's perfect for that guard group.
Yeah, maybe we should talk about the Jazz too.
Yeah, well, I was going to get there. I mean, I wanted to talk about observations. I'm just talking about what I saw from Portland, and I know that's what you were talking about. The Jazz, they're okay. Your takeaway. Give me your biggest surprise of the night. Was there a big surprise at all?
Surprise? My biggest surprise is that Joe Johnson scored 29 points.
I was hoping you'd go Joe.
You know, we'd kind of been anticipating him to come off the bench for the first time in his career, but he's kind of slowing down and, you know, maybe not get our hopes up too much, although he is a multi-time all-star. he looked just fine. You know, he was it was like he just took over in the third quarter and he could not be stopped. And it was just amazing to watch. And, you know, 29 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal. It warmed my heart greatly that Joe was able to put up such a good game. And I would say he was my biggest surprise.
Now, granted, those numbers aren't going to be there consistently when Hayward comes back because he's going to be relegated back to the bench. But can you imagine having a guy like that against other second units? I mean, Joe Johnson's going to destroy a lot of second units this year because that's the kind of player he is.
Yeah, when we were doing our predictions, I remember Devin was like, someone on the Jazz's sixth man. And after one game, Joe Johnson's looking pretty good for that.
I would agree. Another surprise for me, you know, aside from Joe, was Rodney Hood. I mean, not surprises in we're getting anything different out of him, but I think we are. He was very aggressive last night. That's a Hood that we haven't seen, is an aggressive, go-to-the-hoop Rodney. And he put an emphasis on that with that dunk last night over Evan Turner. I like that Rodney Hood. I think that's something we've wanted, isn't it, for a while?
Yeah, and he has had those games. He has had games where he's just taken over. He had a lot of 20-point games last year. And I was expecting at least 20 points out of him with Hayward out. So he delivered.
But the point I'm getting at is that he went to the hoop a lot more than we've seen in the past. A lot of his points come from the perimeter and the mid-range.
He had more free throw attempts than anyone else on the Jazz. And that was a very rare thing last year, if it ever happened at all.
Exactly. And he had dunks, he had layups, he had times when he attacked. And that's what I'm getting at. Hood in the past is not an attacker. He hits the mid-range, he'll hit the fadeaway, he likes the three-point shot. We don't see him attack very often, so it was very, very pleasant to see that from him last night. So
yeah, and I loved everything I saw out of George Hill.
Me too.
I hope he makes more of his threes next time, but man, offense and defense. I just loved watching the Jazz have a really good point guard again.
No, I agree with that. One other point I made, and I don't know how many people really saw this, and I mentioned it on Twitter last night. Dante looked good, but one particular play that I thought was Dante's signature of the night, and I hope we see, I think it's an inkling of things to come, when he drove and drove hard, went right past a guy and got the and-one layup. Do you remember that spot? I think it was in late in the third or in the fourth quarter. That lightning quick burst first step and he was gone. And he attacked. I have not seen attack mode like that from Dante before either. And it was very good. And he finished well and then got to the free throw line for the and-one. That, for Jazz fans, has to be promising and exciting. Because if that's the Dante we're going to get in the future, which I believe it is, Jazz are well off.
Yeah, he had a lot of problems too, though.
He did.
He passed up some shots, especially in the first half, where it was like, I don't like seeing that. And you know, overall, he did have the worst plus minus of the team. So he has a lot of work to do to get himself back into, you know, regular game shape. They only played him 8.5 minutes last night. So I think his return is going to be eased into. Fortunately, the next game's against the Lakers. So that's an easier team to be a little more loose with. And, you know, game two will tell us a different story. The story right now, though, I would say, is that the Jazz are a deep team, but when you're missing your two best players, your bench, you're suddenly starting. And so therefore your anticipated bench is a lot thinner. And we saw that came through when it was, you know, Mac and Ingles and Lyles and Withy. That was like a bench lineup from last year when the bench was our weakness.
Devin, so, go ahead.
John, you mentioned Dante and the plus minus. Can part of that be attributed to who he was put on the court with? Because really he was coming in not in his natural position. He was a backup shooting guard, really, and Shelvin Mack was the backup point guard last night. Is part of that he's playing with that thin bench? Because I really feel like yeah, we didn't see the best out of Dante, but he wasn't really put in the best position. It was almost, I felt like he was used in a way that I wasn't really happy about, but I don't know what else you do. I don't know if you play him as the backup point guard, you give Joe Ingles extra minutes. To me, his role is being moved because you have Hayward out, but also you have Burks out. And I think missing Burks is probably a big part of what's happening here, because Quinn can't go to this kind of three-man rotation between Hayward, Joe, and Rodney.
Yeah, and see, that's, I was going to go right there, Devin. I think that right now Dante's probably in an uncomfortable spot for a few reasons. One, he hasn't played for a year, and really his rookie season, he only started for half a season. So he hasn't had a lot of game time, a lot of minutes. He hasn't seen that for a while. But two, he's in a different spot because they've had to bring him in at the two. And I think with a healthy Burks, I think you're going to see the bench get shifted. You're going to see Burks get more time at that backup two. And I think Dante's going to get moved to that point guard spot. And is Matt going to lose out as a result? I have a feeling that's going to be the case. Now, matchups are going to dictate it too. And that's what I think we're going to see, is a game-by-game matchup change by Quinn.
Yeah, and I think that'll progress throughout the year. Game situation last night, he just really wanted a. I think Quinn was looking for a solid, more traditional point guard backup. And
agreed.
Ekman's just not there yet.
Although you have to wonder, just curious, you have to wonder. I mean, Hill plays great defense, and I thought he played well against Lillard last night. What would change if you put Dante in that matchup and have him try and shut down Lillard, or not shut him down, but slow him down? Is that plausible? Is that possible? I don't know. Is that one of those we look back on?
Defensively, I don't think it would have been that much different. But Hill is such a two-way player that's why Hill's starting. I think Dante will eventually get there, but, against a vet like Lillard, you know, I don't have a problem with how he played Hill, and really I don't know what else he could have done with Exum in that game. It's just that, you know, Jazz starters did their job and the Jazz bench didn't, and that's why they lost. So
right,
I am probably going to take some heat for this, but can we talk a little bit about the defensive philosophy from the big man with the way that Portland was playing? Because what you saw is you saw a lot of high screens and Rudy kind of staying in that mid range, which would allow whoever's coming off the screen, whether it be Crabbe, whether it be Lillard, McCollum, had pretty much a lot of wide open threes.
And that to me falls on Rudy. Rudy's got to come out. That's another reason why we missed Favors, because on those switches, Favors comes out and hedges quickly. He's usually on that guard on the pick like that. So that's where we missed Favors, I think, last night, because I think Favors switches well on those. I've seen Rudy switch better on those than he did last night, to be honest. He switches when he has with Curry. So to be honest, Rudy wasn't switching off as well as I think he's capable of.
And that's what I thought. It just seemed a little bit odd. And it was one of those things where it was like, this isn't something that's going to burn you with every team, because not every team has a backcourt like Portland does. However, yeah, we talk about the Jazz potentially being a kryptonite for Golden State. You put a team like that, or you have someone out there who can shoot one or two guys even decently. If it continued down that path, that could be a real problem for the Jazz, because teams have found something perhaps that could be problematic, and really that's something I want to see the Jazz face again soon and make sure that kind of gets addressed.
Yeah, I mean, they would set really high screens, and so the perimeter defense overall just didn't look good for the Jazz. They did make a lot of good moves, but you know, when the team can finish 13 out of 19 from three, you know, you can't really say, despite good defense, they did that. I mean, there were a few times where Rudy was caught in the mid-range, and that looked to me like designed that way. The Blazers wanted to get their high screens so they can have the guy open for a three, or maybe he can slash if he's able to pull the guy in far enough.
And again,
but there were a lot of times where Rudy was caught mid, or Dia was caught mid, where the big man just needed to run all the way up on the shooter and just trust that the other big man can cover low.
And again, I think that's where we missed Favors most, because Favors on the defensive side is very well known to be able to come out on those. Favors doesn't let those go uncontested.
And that's fine, but at the same time, this is something that you have to be able to address as your philosophy
absolutely.
As a team.
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to have Rudy and Favors in all the time. You're going to have Lyles in.
Right.
You're going to have Dia. And if you have those two in together.
Right.
You know,
well, and what was the disturbing number? You can quote me on or quote on the, you might find this one quicker than I did, John, but I saw a number tweeted out late last night, early this morning, that the uncontested shots that Portland had versus the uncontested shot the Jazz had. Jazz actually had four more uncontested shots on the night than Portland did, but the Jazz were horrible in making their shots. Portland made 60% of them. The Jazz didn't make shots.
Yeah, Locke said something about that. I think he said the Jazz were 11 out of 30 on their uncontested shots.
Yeah, whereas Portland hit some 60, 70%. It's one thing for Portland to do that. It's another thing when you're missing wide open shots. You know, defense is a problem. You got to make shots.
It was their three-point shooting. They were 8 of 24. I mean, the shooting overall wasn't that bad. They shot 48%.
Right.
You know, they just lost it at the end there, but.
No, but there were moments. I mean, there was a cold spell, I want to say, like in the third quarter.
And there was a cold spell in the second quarter where they took a 12, 10, 11, 12 point lead.
The third quarter is when they got right back in it.
Yeah.
But I remember Dia seemed to have a hard time getting those shots, because I remember, I want to say it was Dante kept throwing it to him out on for the three.
Well, yeah. In fact, there were four consecutive plays in a row where two of them went to Diaw and he missed threes, open threes, and the other two were George Hill and he missed open threes. All four of those situations were the two veterans we brought in. So, yeah, again, missed shots. Diaw, I'm glad you bring him up, because dude didn't have a bright night last night. In fact, didn't have a good night at all. And I think that goes back to, again, you're going deep on the bench and Diaw is not a starter anymore. He's just not. And I'd like, you know, obviously we've got to get past the health issues. They brought in depth, but it's hard to get past it when your two star players are not playing.
Well, I mean, I really thought Lyles should have had more minutes, especially from the way Dia was playing. Lyles didn't look particularly good either.
No,
but you know, Dia was not brought in to play 32 minutes a night. And
no, he wasn't.
I would have preferred to see a little more leeway given to Lyles last night, but it just didn't work out that way.
Well, and I tend to think that part of that might have been defensively. I think Dia, I mean, again, I'm making a guess here, but I think Dia had better attention on the defensive end.
Well, Dia's defense was pretty good. His offense was really bad, and I would be inclined to think that it was a bad night, that this is not what we're just going to expect from Dia on offense.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
He had some awesome passes. He'd catch with one hand and throw it immediately. He had some stuff that we haven't seen before. But yeah, overall, I can't really applaud his offensive game last night.
No. Well, let's look ahead then. You know, I think we've spent enough time talking about the Blazers. We've got Lakers coming up on Friday. What are your guys' expectations for the blue out, the home opener?
A lot of blue that night, but I think
Pride jersey premiere.
And I think the Jazz are going to roll that night. I don't think it's going to be, I don't expect it to be close.
Well, they're having a high-scoring game against Houston, which is to be expected because Houston's supposed to be one of the best offenses and worst defenses in the league this year.
D'Antoni.
Yes. I'll be interested to see what the Lakers look like now that they're finally free of Kobe. And, you know, I expect the Jazz to win by 20, and I think it's going to be a fun one to watch them just smash them. And that's what I hope to see. Especially if Favors is back, then I think everyone's just going to have fun and we're going to see a lot of, you know, dunks and whatnot. That's what I expect.
Same here. And I'm curious to see on the Lakers side, I'm curious to see what Luke Walton is starting to integrate offensively for that team. You know, in the past, it's always, like you said, last year with Kobe, it was just giving the ball. But Walton's got some tools on that team to work with. He's got Randall. He's got, you know, he's got guys that he can work into a system now where they're not having to dump it off to a guy that's taking 30 shots a night. Now they can pass it around and move it around. I wonder what Luke Walton's philosophy is going to be. So I will be watching for that. But more than anything, yeah, I'm with you. I think the Jazz are going to roll in this one. I think it's going to be one of those fun games, 20-point games. And that's just, it's opening night. I don't think anybody's going to ruin that for the Jazz.
I'm not so confident.
No?
No, and it's not that I'm pessimistic about the Jazz season. I am still very much in the mindset that they can get the fourth spot, that they can get 50 wins. But I don't see them coming and blowing out a team by 20 points right now. Even the Lakers, I get the feeling that they'll end up probably 10-12 point win when all is said and done. But I think they're going to have to work for it. And at the same time, Luke Walton may be coming in and he may have some okay pieces to work with. But the fact is, this is not the most talented Lakers roster. It is not what they really wanted, you know, right, where their star signings are Mozgov, you know, most improved player candidate from a year ago, I think.
Like Randall. Randall's a good piece for them.
But Dang is not your premier player. But it's the same thing with that you're going to see with the Jazz, that you're going to see with any team. They're still going to be figuring it out. And it's not just adding new pieces. It's adding a whole new system, a new coach. It's a brand new experiment that they're really running. So, yeah, the Jazz should blow them out, I think, but I just don't expect it to happen. But what I'm looking forward to perhaps the most is the fan overreaction about the jerseys if the Jazz do not do well. Because if the Jazz struggle in this, there will be sleeve haters everywhere. And I am one of the biggest haters of sleeves that you have ever met.
I didn't mind it on Portland last night.
I can't play in it. I hate sleeves. They change the feel of the shooting motion. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but I would LeBron it and just rip the sleeves right off it.
All right. What were you going to say, John?
I was going to do a roster rundown.
For the Lakers? So
when they play the Lakers, you have George Hill versus D'Angelo Russell. Who wins that matchup?
George Hill.
Easily and handily. Shooting guard, you have Rodney Hood against Nick Young.
Rodney Hood. Sorry, Swaggy P, no love here. Rodney Hood.
There you go. Okay, at the three, you're going to have Joe Johnson versus Luol Deng.
Joe Johnson. Maybe.
Okay.
That's a wash. No, I think that's a wash.
I don't think that's a wash.
Wait a minute. I want to go back to the shooting guard. Is it Nick Young or is it Clarkson that's their starting two?
No, Nick Young started tonight.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
Okay.
At the four, we anticipate that we will have Derek Favors against Julius Randle.
Derek Favors. And if it's not Derek Favors and it's Julius Randle versus Diao, that's where I think Julius Randle gets the upper hand.
It's a tie at that point.
It's a wash, you think?
Yeah, yeah. I think so, because you've got a veteran with experience and you've got a young, talented player. You know,
right.
I think it kind of balances out.
All right, fair enough. And then center?
Mozgov versus Gobert.
Gobert all day.
Gobert. Now let's go to the bench. Jazz bench, you have... let me think. So
Mac.
If Favors is there, then your bench is Mac, Exum, Lyles, Ingles, Diaw. And the Lakers bench is Clarkson, Ingram, Nance... Lou Williams, Tariq Black.
Can I say something?
Williams and Clarkson might be your best group, best bunch on that group.
That Lakers bench might be better than their starters.
Yeah, that's not bad. It's not a bad assessment.
When you think about it, you've got Lou Williams, who was a sixth man of the year a couple years back.
You got Jordan Clarkson, who's been
Jordan
solid.
Clarkson.
Right, who I thought was starting.
Right.
Nance, if I remember, is he a point guard? He played pretty well last year towards the end when we saw him. Wasn't fantastic by any means, but.
And then they've got the rookie.
Yeah, and then they've got the number two pick.
Who knows what he is so far. You're right. So if you know, even without Favors, you still shift our bench around. I still think the Jazz bench is still better than the Lakers bench. So no, I don't think that the outcome
Houston just put 71 on the Lakers at the half.
Holy crap.
To give you an idea.
Yeah, we should be fine.
I lied. We're going to win by 30.
All right, let's move on from that game. The next opponent behind that would be the Clippers. And that's going to be a game in and of itself that should be intriguing. But then the next game is against the Spurs. And we're playing the Spurs two times next week. The Jazz are playing the Spurs two times next week. Let's switch gears and talk Spurs for a minute. They played last night. And oh, they played last night.
I'm actually not surprised the Spurs won. I'm surprised that they dominated them for the entire game.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not surprising. And Kawhi Leonard goes off for 30. Does that surprise anybody either?
Wasn't he runner-up in the MVP voting last year? Wasn't he defensive player of
Kawhi
the year?
Kawhi had 35. LaMarcus had 26. Jonathan Simmons had 20.
I was going to say, Devin showed some love on his TL last night about Simmons. He was watching a little bit of that. Simmons, wow.
Well, we saw him in Jazz Summer League.
Yes, we did, and he looked good.
And he looked very good in Summer League. He was more impressive than the other Simmons that we saw.
Yes, he was.
And I'm not sure if you saw that dunk at the end of the game last night.
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah.
You know, is he a rookie? I don't know what he is. I know he's been kind of floating around the D-League, but in terms of being in the NBA, is this his first NBA team action?
No, I feel like he was in last year. I'll look him up. Give me a second.
Once again, it's Greg Popovich just pulling the magic out with guys, finding the diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, he played last year. He played in 55 games for the Spurs. You'd get like 6 points a game.
And now Duncan's gone and the window's wide open for a guy like Simmons. I mean, wow.
I was going to throw him into the rookie of the year conversation, but honestly, if that's how he is going to play, most improved player candidate, yes or no?
So you're saying I got the team right when I called for most improved player. I just chose the wrong person.
Yeah. I mean, sure, if he can keep up this 20 points a game pace, sure.
Well, he just played fantastic. I mean, he had that beautiful block on Curry.
Yeah.
The LeBron chase down block.
The score when I looked at it early on, that, like you said, John, they dominated from start to finish. That game was just wow.
It was the Spurs bench just decimated the Warriors bench. Iguodala was a minus 28.
Right.
And the Warriors bench doesn't look that good when you look at it, because your Warriors bench is Iggy, Ian Clark, David West, Livingston, McCaw.
Yeah. Sorry. And let's be honest, Sean Livingston and Iggy are your two best players on the bench.
Yeah.
I mean,
he had 2 points. Livingston had 2 points. West had 2 points. McCaw had 2 points.
Coming into the season, I don't think there was any question that Golden State was going to be great, but that their biggest weakness was going to be their bench, their depth. Am I right? I don't think anybody questioned the starting five. It's the depth that's the problem in Golden State.
I thought the beginning of their bench was still pretty good.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, it's once you get out to the eighth, ninth man, then yeah, it fell off pretty drastically. But that always seemed to work out for them because, you know, Ian Clark is not that great a player, and they were making it work with Ian Clark and Mo Spates and Brandon Rush at the end of their bench last year. So why wouldn't you think it would work again this year?
Well, I'll tell you why it's not working. It's probably the fact that they really don't have a talented big man.
They don't
have their death lineup, but they do not have Bogut and they do not have Azili, and that really seemed to show.
Agreed.
So it'll be interesting. There is the curve. You know, we saw it with LeBron when he went to Miami. You see it with every team. It seems like when you get a few new pieces in, or you lose some guys that you're used to depending on. The Warriors will get it together. Let's not make this more than it needs to be.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Are you guys ready to change your pick for the championship yet? I mean, are the Spurs making a case after one game that they're going to be up there in a battle for it?
I honestly do not know. It'll depend how that bench comes together for Golden State, because really their starters will get it together. They will learn how to play together. You cannot have four of the best 20 players in the league on your starting five and not just be amazing. But if you can't go to your bench and you can't get those guys rest, then Golden State really could run into problems, not only in the regular season, but also in the playoffs, because at the playoffs, it doesn't matter if you get guys rest, there's still going to be a little bit of exhaustion and fatigue that sets in after 82 games. And you have to think, you know, if they're not that number one seed, let's just pretend here for a minute that Golden State gets off to a very rough start. The bench can't get it together. The starters are still figuring it out. And let's say they finish in third place. Well, then instead of matching up against someone like the Timberwolves or Houston or something like that, what are they looking at? Is there a chance they could be looking at the Jazz in the first round? They could be looking at a revenge Russell Westbrook series. They could be looking at the Blazers again. And we saw what the Blazers did last year, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm not ready to say that the Warriors are not going to be the number one seed and not going to win it all. I'm going to stand by that for now, but it did make me pause a little bit just with that first game reaction, but let's give it a couple weeks and see where we're at.
All right. So while we're talking about reactions off of first games, let's jump over to, we've talked about the two best teams in the West. Let's jump over to the best team in the East. Just for a moment, did either of you watch the game with the Cavs and the Knicks last night, early game?
I watched about a quarter's worth. You know, Cavs just look solid from beginning to end from what I saw. And then what you just looking at the play-by-play recap. So.
Well, and Matt Moore of CBS did a great piece on that today, talking about LeBron too. LeBron, game one of the NBA season, all of a sudden LeBron looks like the NBA regular season matters. Sometimes you wonder, but last night, from what I saw of him in the game and then what I'm reading from Matt Moore, LeBron looks very focused already. There's 81 games to go, but if game one LeBron's looking like that, watch out.
Slow down.
Watch out.
Slow down.
Yeah.
There's a reason. There's a reason he looks that focused, Alan.
Why is that?
If you get your rings and then you lose to the Knicks...
Right. Home. No, I agree.
No, you have to win that game.
But I have to think LeBron's very motivated this year, too. Just because he won it last year, I think he's even more motivated, especially with the Warriors getting better.
No, I think he is. I definitely think that the entire Cavs team is, because they know that they can win now. The city of Cleveland...
The monkey's off their back.
...knows that they can win now.
Guys, Undertaker showed up and gave them a WWE belt before. How can you not get up for that game?
Somehow I had a feeling one of these episodes, John, would sneak in a WWE reference. There you go.
There's
there you have
sneaky.
It.
Sneaky. It's the Undertaker. No, at the Cavs game.
Cleveland looked good. You know, I just watched the highlights, and LeBron looks good. The team's going to play well. I was most impressed by the way J.R. Smith was dressed in, like, a post-game interview. He had a shirt on. I think it had a collar and everything.
Did it look weird?
It was different, but it was professional.
You know, things are getting weird when Devin starts talking about the way J.R. Smith dresses. Wow, Devin. Wow.
Anyways, I did want to mention another kickoff. We've mentioned Russ played the Sixers tonight.
Triple double, didn't he?
Uh-huh. No.
Or was he close?
He was one assist away.
Oh, did they win? Did the Thunder end up winning? Okay.
But the Sixers hung with him, it looks like. I didn't watch the game.
What was Embiid's line at the end of the night?
It was down to the final minute before the Thunder. I watched the end of that game. It was...
What was Embiid's line?
Pretty cool. Embiid, let's see. Embiid was 20 points, 7 boards, 2 blocks.
Oh, dude, starting it off already. Rookie of the
Embiid
year,
made
definitely.
A three.
Embiid made a three?
Embiid made a three.
Wow. Dang. There's your rookie of the year candidate right there, and he's starting it off.
Man, someone else.
Yeah, Sergio Rodriguez was a sneaky good signing for them.
Wow.
Yeah, 12 points, 9 assists.
All right. Well, okay, let's you got something else, Devin?
Someone else had a night.
Who had a night tonight?
Did you guys see AD's line?
No.
Yes!
The brow?
Well, oh, I heard okay. rumblings about okay. it. What happened?
50 points, 16 rebounds, 7 steals, 5 assists, and 4 blocks.
And they still lost.
Where's the MVP trophy? No,
no, that's
it's
wow.
So...
Who'd they lose to?
Nuggets.
Oh.
But here's who they started around Anthony Davis. Tim Frazier, Etuan Moore, Solomon Hill, and Omer Asik.
Who?
That's sad.
Notice I just said who?
It is just sad that they cannot put a team around him.
I know,
what are
right?
They still doing
I know Drew Holiday's dealing with his thing, and that's, you know, really terrible, but, you know, Langston Galloway, and I mean, there's just no help for him there. And, you know, when I see that the Sonics are going to be doing their renewed push to get a team back, you look around the NBA and say, okay, what team could be sold to go there if they don't expand? I think Pelicans have to be one of the teams that you got to think about.
Yeah.
That's just where my head went. When your guy is 50 and 16 and 7, I mean, and you still can't win, it's just pathetic what they've done.
Time to move.
Him. And it's sad, and I feel bad for him because he's been there a long time, isn't it? Isn't he in like his 6th year or something? And it's just been floundering and floundering.
Like he came in the same
year,
class
maybe.
as Lillard.
As Lillard? So that's close to...
Same class as Lillard?
Yeah, wasn't he the number
years?
One?
Yeah, this is his 5th year. This would make it his 5th year. Lillard was drafted the summer of 2012.
And he's been obviously a stud since his rookie year, and yet they can't seem to put a decent team around them.
Yeah. All right. Last item.
Anyway.
On NBA news, last item. Let's jump over to and talk CBS Sports. So today, a couple of pieces came out on CBS Sports, actually within the last couple of days. First thing was the 30... Well, no, that was not the first thing. What was the first one? First one I brought up today, the 6 Utah Jazz players making the top 100 list for CBS Sports.
Yeah, you had Gordon Hayward at 26. You had Derek Favors at 29. Rudy Gobert at 34. Rodney Hood at 50. Trey Lyles at 73. George Hill at 78. And I would argue that Joe Johnson must have barely missed the list. Especially after last night.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone recognizes what a deep team they are and how many talented players they have on their team.
Yeah.
So just imagine what this team could be when their 2 best players are back in the game.
Well, that's a, you know, and there has been a lot of love from the media, national media, out there for the Jazz over the last month and a half, 2 months. Well, since the signings. So, yeah, top 100 lists. There's been two of them, three of them already, and then the Jazz are getting some love on those lists. So, not surprising at all. Not really. And I would argue with you that, yeah, Joe Johnson might be just on the cusp of that top 100. Not just because of his night last night, but because it's Joe Johnson.
That's seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
My bad. Forgot to mention that.
Call him by his official title.
My bad. My bad. All right.
Seven-time All-Star.
And the other piece that I read, I want to read a quote from the piece before I mention it. The Jazz aren't trying to break you with a death lineup. They're pounding you into oblivion with a death swarm. This coming from also CBS Sports, from Matt Moore, about the 30 reasons to be excited for this season. Jazz being number 20 on that list. That list was a pretty good list, too. There's a lot of great, great things he mentioned to look forward to this year.
Yeah, and it's true, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
I just like to use the word death swarm. So you have Golden State's the death lineup, Utah's the death swarm.
Yeah, but that would fit so much better if it were the Hornets.
Oh gosh, we're not getting on the subject of changing Jazz names again.
No,
okay,
I'm just
the
saying
Utah Deseret.
Oh, this could end
please
badly.
Please never change the team name.
Yes, please don't. And please let's not get on this subject. No. All right.
Okay.
Anything further? Now, you put out for listener questions. No. Did we get any responses?
I had one question.
Okay.
And that is, does Exum need to play the two?
I think we already discussed it a little bit. No, yeah. I don't think he does. I think right now he does, but I think when all players are accounted for back at their natural positions, no, he doesn't.
Yeah, I think when he's in, most of the time on defense, he's going to be against whoever their better player is between point guard and shooting guard. And then on offense, he is pretty much the two because it's usually George Hill or Shelvin Mack who's going to be taking the ball up the court. And I do think as the season goes on, more of his minutes will be in the one spot instead of the two spot.
Was that question from our good friends at Jazz Kitball?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I want to give those guys, you know, love and appreciate that question because I think it's a good question. I think one of the things they wanted to point out was to try and take an objective viewpoint at it, saying, look, maybe he could work at the two. And right now he can. Long-term, Exum is not a two. I think his more natural spot is the point guard position. Mm-hmm. But he is a point guard with the capabilities to work, to guard both the two and the one. And offensively, yeah, he could probably work in that combo guard situation. But I think his most natural spot is at the point guard. And I think that's where he fits. And right now, he just looks uncomfortable playing the two at times.
Well, he looked uncomfortable last night. And so we need another week and some more games behind us.
Agreed.
To really, that's what the season always is. We need another week of information.
No, I agree. So, no, that's a great question. And that's a question I think we ought to put on the shelf and just, like, mark it and watch it. Like you said, watch it as the season progresses because I'm curious to see his development. This is a development year for Dante. I know people don't want to look at it that way, but it is. We know what he's capable of. Now we're going to watch him put it out there. So,
all right, let's go to Devin's quick hits.
All right, Devin, quick hits.
Oh man, where do we start? Should we start with the World Series?
Let's do it.
Currently tied at 1-1. You have Cleveland Indians and you have the Chicago Cubs.
So the Cubs won tonight.
You have two teams who really generally have no business playing in the World Series, it seems like. One of them gets to win. The other one gets to not. So we've talked about this a little bit before. We got the matchup, I think, that we kind of wanted. A lot of us wanted. So with the tied series, who are you guys thinking is going to win? I don't care who you want to win. Who do you think is going to win and why?
I am rooting for the Cubs.
That was not the answer.
But I think the Indians are going to actually win. And, you know, either one's okay with me. The Indians, as I've looked at previous scores, it just looks like the Indians have had more, been more consistent with the way they've won. Cubs seem to hit dry spells. I think their last loss, they were shut out. But so I do think the Indians will win overall. But as someone who just never really watches baseball, but my whole childhood, I always kind of liked the Cubs. And then after I saw the movie Major League, I was kind of like the Indians. And so those are the two teams that I would kind of follow. And then the Mariners for a while, too, because I lived in Seattle for a bit. But the fact that it's the Cubs and the Indians, I just think that's so cool. And, you know, I'd be happy for either of them. I think in my heart, I'm pulling for the Cubs a little bit more. But I do think the Indians are going to win it.
Devin, I don't like you for this question.
I know, but we have to talk about it, Alan.
I know, but I don't like you for it because I cannot analyze and give you reasons why I think one or the other will win because I don't know. What was the final score of the game tonight?
I don't know.
You don't know? I know last night it was dominating. Cleveland won, 6-0, I think, last night. And they dominated.
We're checking.
Please do. I'm curious.
Last night it was 6-0. Tonight, 5-1.
Okay, so it was reversal, completely reversal. Okay. You know, I'm kind of leaning towards what John said. I really don't care who wins. I kind of think it's cool they're both there. But I think it's going to be Cleveland. Don't ask me why, because I don't know. I just think it'll be Cleveland. And it will be kind of interesting. Cleveland wins it in basketball last year. LeBron brings the first title there. And, you know, now the Indians will turn around and do the same thing in the World Series. And maybe LeBron will turn around and cap it off with another title. And you have three in a row. I don't know. But, I think it's going to be Cleveland.
Okay. My logic is that it's going to be Cleveland, and it's along the same lines. It's the fact that the curse has kind of been broken.
There you go.
And it wasn't LeBron and the Cavs who did it. It was an MMA fighter who won a belt in Cleveland, from Cleveland, if I recall, last year.
Wow, we went from WWE guy handing over a belt in the pregame now MMA being the reason that the curse is broke. Wow, dude. Wow.
It's got to start somewhere, Alan.
I know.
But I'm definitely with you, John. I would love to see the Cubs win it. And I know it'd be great for Cleveland as well, but talking to people, it seems like the Cleveland fans have kind of been less engaged than the Cubs fans. I feel like Cubs fans have really suffered for their team. I feel like they are fiercely loyal, especially in a city where there's another major league team right there. You know, they could easily go over and cheer for the White Sox, but the Cubs fans have stayed loyal, and it would just be great. I mean, the perfect ending would be if they have a rookie and he can throw a really good fastball, and then, like, all of a sudden something happens with his arm and he can't, and he just floats the last pitch, you know, like softball style. No one's seen Rookie of the Year. Is it just me?
I've seen it. Yes, I've seen it. You talk about the kid that fell on his shoulder and it tweaked and he ended up throwing 90-mile-an-hour fastballs. I know what game. I know what show you're talking about. Yes.
I want that ending.
Okay. I could go with that. Quick hit number two.
All right. NFL, I watched the Monday night game between Denver and Houston. Brock Osweiler. Houston threw a lot of money at this guy, and it seems like he is really struggling this season. Did the Houston Texans maybe make a terrible decision, or is this just him kind of finding his way into the starting position? Alan?
Okay, I don't know how he's performed on the season. I mean, has he really been that bad this season as a whole? Because here's my take on this game against Denver. Osweiler did decently well for Denver last year, and I know Denver's pretty unhappy about the way he walked away from it. But could it be that he was just going into this game was already just a little nervous going into playing his former team, and maybe he just didn't play up to par because of it? I mean, he had some really bad, really horribly errant passes that just didn't look good. And yeah, he looked horrible. Part of that was Denver's defense. Part of that looked like he just had nerves. I don't know. Is that, you tell me how bad he's been this year.
Okay. Against Denver, he had 131 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. The week before, against Indiana, he had 269 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. The week before against Minnesota, again, you got a great defense here, 184 yards, one touchdown, one interception. So, I mean, you're looking at it there. He's the last three games. Those are pretty low numbers for a quarterback. But at the same time, we are seeing two elite defenses.
Yeah.
Mixed in there.
So. And that's why I don't know whether that's a lot on Osweiler. You know, the guy took a hard hit the other night, not on the field, but to his pride. And a lot of people were talking about it. I don't know. I want to see how he fares the rest of the season. That's what I'm curious about. John?
I don't know how the Texans are 4-3 with him. I was following him more closely because I drafted him as one of my fantasy quarterbacks, and it became clear to me early on that he was just not going to be doing much for me. And I don't know how, when you look at his numbers, they are just not that great. And yet the Texans are 4-3. So, you know, they must be doing something right. You know, he's been able to step up at the more winnable games. I mean, the Bears aren't looking good this year. The Titans look terrible this year. The Indiana was a bit of a surprise, but you expected all the losses against the Patriots and the Vikings and the Broncos. So, you know, he hasn't exactly been a dud, but you know, he's nothing special. He is your backup quarterback on the vast majority of other NFL teams.
Yeah, and he threw some duds the other night. Some, like I said, some of those errant passes you just looked at like, dude, what are you throwing at?
Yeah, and it's just interesting.
I don't know.
You know, I'm looking at his rating. His rating is like at a 71.9, but you look at his average yards. Against Denver, it was 3.2 yards per pass. But he had 41 attempts and only 22 completions.
Which is just over 50%.
Yeah, but that's a lot of passing and not a lot of yards.
No, I agreed.
And a lot of those yards came on that last drive. He probably picked up 30-plus yards right there, you know, when it didn't really matter. So I don't know. It's one of those interesting things. As a Broncos fan, I actually feel relieved that they didn't retain him. But maybe that's just me.
I think a lot of Broncos fans feel the way you do.
Well, let's talk about something else then, Alan.
Yes.
We should probably talk about college football. You know, because there's a show that comes on Saturday mornings that is coming to Salt Lake. College Game Day. Coming to the U. I believe they came last year.
I don't remember. Did they? Only the second time they've come, isn't it? Or is it the third time?
I'm guessing they've been here quite a bit.
Maybe, maybe not.
You know, Utah's had some pretty good teams in recent years.
Well, they've been to both Salt Lake and Provo a few times. Provo twice, but in both times in Provo, the Cougars lost. So yeah. Anyway.
Well, let's talk about. We'll talk about the game a little bit, but I want to talk about who is your celebrity picker. If you could have someone to represent the state of Utah, and I know I'm putting you guys on the spot here, to get up there with the guys and make the selections, who would it be? Last time they were here, it was John Stockton.
I saw somebody tweet out that he wished it would be Jamal Anderson.
Oh, that'd be good.
That would be good.
Gosh, it's hard because
I don't know.
You know, I'd kind of like our lieutenant governor to be the one.
Oh, there you go.
I'd like Spencer Cox to be the one who shows up and does it.
That's actually not a bad, you know, that's not a bad bad choice either. I could get on board with that. Spencer, we know you listen to us.
He can't hear you, Alan.
I'm sure he listens to us when he's out on the farm working, right?
Yeah.
See, I had heard Weddle as an idea of someone to kind of
that
throw
would be
in
tremendous.
There.
That would be great. Yeah.
I've heard Carl Malone's name floated.
Yeah.
What about Katherine Heigl?
No.
She's a Utah person.
No.
They've had like Katy Perry on
there. Does she live here?
Yeah, I think she has a place up in like Park City or something like that.
I mean, you might as well get Ty Burrell from Modern Family if you're going to do that.
See, and people have thrown that out, but he is a hardcore Ducks fan.
Oh, is he?
He is. And I believe he's been on game day for Oregon before. So we can't be, you know, especially in the same conference. So I don't know. If people have ideas, we'd love to hear them.
Absolutely.
Last thing, I guess, let's talk about the game.
Have Bogut show up.
There you go.
That'd be hilarious.
Bogut, yeah. All right, let's talk about the game. Go ahead.
Utah will face off against the Washington Huskies.
One of the top three teams, I think, three best teams in the country. I think they're rated number five, I think. But
yeah,
I believe
they're four or five. Or
I still think they're
poll.
One of the top three best.
So I want to know who your pick is, and I want your prediction of what type of game we're going to be looking at, because the Utes have kind of been two different teams at times, it seems like. They'll have a very low-scoring defensive battle, and then the next game, like what we saw last week with UCLA, it turns into just an all-out offensive game, you know, where they're scoring over 50 points.
I think it's going to be like that UCLA game. I think it's going to be a high-scoring, high-octane game between the two teams. And I'm going to pick... I'd love to see Utah do it. I think Washington's going to win. And I think they're going to win by a touchdown. But I think it's going to be one of those high-octane... back and forth, throw them down the field types of games. I think Troy Williams is going to have a great game. I think Joe Williams is going to have himself another great game. I don't think he's going to run for 300 yards, but he's going to have another good game.
But you're thinking it's going to be close at least.
Yes. Yes, I do.
And with that, Utah loses. They can't slip that much in the polls, can they?
Utah?
No, I mean, if they lose this game in a close one, when you think about what happened last week, Ohio State losing to Purdue.
Well, where's Utah? Where's Utah ranked though?
They're like 16 or 17.
No, I don't think they'll drop.
You look at.
I don't think they'll drop too much. I think the drop for them would be more than it would be for Washington if Washington loses. I don't think Washington would fall very far if they lost.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will be.
John, what are your thoughts?
I would expect high scoring. I'm just kind of comparing how Washington did on their schedule versus how Utah did on their schedule. Washington beat Oregon State by a lot more. Utah, it seems like even now Utah sometimes plays down to their competition. But that also means they play up to their competition. I mean, who would you say their best opponent has been so far this year?
Utah's?
Yeah.
Probably the Trojans at this point, wouldn't it be? USC?
Yeah, but they weren't that good when we played them.
Okay.
They were really struggling when we played them.
I don't know if the Utes have had one.
This is the Utes easily their biggest challenge to date, but what has been their second biggest challenge?
That's tough to say. I mean, Arizona's not really that great of a team.
Everyone's beating Arizona this year.
UCLA has not been very good.
I don't know if you can really put a rivalry game in that mix, because when a rivalry game like between BYU, I mean, that came down to the wire, but you didn't know what you were going to get from both of those teams at that point in time anyway. So I don't know if that's their second best win of the season.
It could be, but here's the problem. And you guys may hate me for saying this, but I don't feel like BYU really has a quality win. They have good wins against P5 teams. I'll give them that. They've beat I think Michigan State, they beat Mississippi
State. That's their
quality
win. Michigan State
is awful this year.
Yeah, but you're on the road. That's a quality win to go on a road like that.
Yeah, but it's still a bad team.
Right.
So they really don't have a game, even the Boise State game, which I watched. I mean,
yeah.
they were right in it.
Yeah, and Boise State's ranked, 14th?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't like Boise State.
No, what I will say...
I think their second best competition would have been USC.
And see, that's what I'm leaning.
I mean, they're the only team that Utah has played that's getting any votes in any of the polls.
Utah just played them at the right time, is what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. See, now if you go to Washington, I'm going to turn your question towards Washington. I think Washington's best win of the season, would you argue with me on this, was Stanford?
Stanford.
At the time it was.
I mean, Stanford was top 10 at the time, weren't they?
Yeah, but they completely fell off.
They did.
And so at the time, that was Washington's best win. But who besides, what's their second best win? Who is the next best team they've beat?
Well, they went on to crush Oregon, and then they crushed Oregon State. They've just been destroying everybody since then.
And that's the thing to look at. Regardless of who they're playing, they're destroying everybody they're playing against.
Okay, I just need to shift gears for just one moment. I have received a tweet, and this guy should maybe be our picker.
Okay.
Dalai Lama just tweeted a photo. And I just retweeted it, so you can go look it right now if you'd like to. But I gave him an idea for a new picture.
Super Williams Brothers.
Is that not amazing?
Cool. That's cool.
Okay.
I want him to pick. And it doesn't even have to be him. It can just be like a picture that they put up in his voice, and he's somewhere in the background still mysterious. I love it. I love it. Huge shout out to him for that.
So, John, you said this was going to be... So, who's going to win the game, John? That's the only thing you haven't picked yet.
Washington.
Okay. There you go. All right, Devin, that's a quick hit. Do you have any more?
No, I'm too busy looking at this awesome picture. That is phenomenal.
All right, well, let's...
So beautiful.
Let's switch gears for our final segment. Pop culture. All right, John, so you have some movies you wanted to, and a TV show you wanted to talk about this week.
Yes. I saw Ouija 2, Origin of Evil. I never saw the first movie because it got terrible reviews and it looked kind of boring. But this next one was a prequel, and the reviews were really good, so I figured I didn't have to see the first one for this to make sense, and that was true. But I think I maybe went in with expectations a little too high because the reviews were so positive. I just thought it was run of the mill, really. It was just kind of a normal, not that scary horror movie. It's about a widowed mother and her two daughters and in the 60s, and the mother makes a living being a medium. So she has all these tricks to make her clients think that she can talk to spirits and see in the crystal ball and all that stuff. And she brings home a Ouija board to try to add to her repertoire. But when her youngest daughter plays with the Ouija board, she winds up coming in contact with a real spirit that possesses her. And so for the rest of the movie, you watch this possessed girl who's able to do things. And so it's at that point, it's very similar to The Omen. And, you know, it had a couple decent scares here and there, but I was expecting it to build to something, and it really just kind of stayed on the same level through the whole movie. So I didn't think it was that great. And I usually love horror movies, but there have been a lot of better ones that have come out this year. So I guess maybe that let me down too. I thought Conjuring 2, Lights Out, Don't Breathe, all of those movies were scarier. So that's what I thought of that one. And then I also saw The Accountant, and
I've heard
I was
very
really, really
good things
excited
about it.
For this. Yeah, I was really excited for it. And then I was following Rotten Tomatoes and only got like 50%. So I was like, oh shoot. I was hoping it would be good. But you know, I actually quite enjoyed it. And maybe I was helped in this case by having lowered expectations. But Ben Affleck plays a guy with Asperger's syndrome who's really good with numbers. And so he's like the best accountant in the world, but he's able to get super rich because all the major criminals and terrorists throughout the world want to use him because he's so good and because he's discreet. And it winds up being an action movie because he winds up getting burned, and so he has to go on the run. And you know, I thought it was put together well. It was probably a little too long. It was 2 hours and 20 minutes. They probably could have trimmed about 10 minutes and it wouldn't have lost much. And I guess one of the twists very early on in the movie, and kind of had to wait for the end to get there, but then it had a couple more at the very end that I thought were really cool. So I liked it. It was, you know, and if it made a sequel, I'd go see it. If they made The Accountant 2, I'd go see it. Because
who was this co-star
Ben Affleck
in it?
Anna Kendrick.
That's right.
I'll go see it.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it overall. I thought it was worth seeing.
Yeah, and I've heard quite a few rave reviews about it. So I was curious to hear about what you thought of it. So that's good.
Yep. Also, The Walking Dead is back.
And yeah. My timeline's been filled up with people that were either unhappy or crying or something after Sunday night.
Well, comic readers knew this time was coming, and they also know that just because certain things happen in the comics doesn't necessarily mean they're going to happen on the TV show. And it wound up being far more brutal than I thought it would, even though the basic plot is what happened in the comics. It was the return was like a full hour of psychological torture, and then two characters you've come to care about get killed in just horrible fashion. They have their heads beaten in with a baseball bat, and just the way it dragged out and dragged on, and just the cruelty of it. It was just draining, and my wife actually had to leave in the middle of the episode because it was so tough to watch, to the point where she's like, maybe I should watch Walking Dead by myself for a while and just let her know what happens, and she'll just try to decide if she wants to get back in or not. But that might have been too much for her. She might just quit watching the show because it was that rough. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what its ratings does over the next few weeks. But I bet you there are a few people that just quit watching after that episode.
And I have still never watched an episode of The Walking Dead.
Well, I really enjoy it. It is pretty bleak, you know, because it's the end of the world. But it always has these things that happen that I enjoy, but this one made it clear. And you know, I know it's coming because of the comics, but man, to watch it played out like that and to watch the way they did it, it looks like this is going to be a really rough season.
All right, well, anything else you've seen? Those are the things you wanted to talk about. Anything you've seen, Devin?
Don't. Okay. just the usual fall lineup of TV. It's nice to have it back. I've been watching Gotham. Are you guys watching that?
I have not.
John, have you watched that?
Watching what?
Gotham.
Oh yeah, I'm watching Gotham. Enjoying it.
Yeah, the season to me, it's really interesting because the seasons, I don't know if it's a single season or how it's broken up, but they kind of break it into different sections of the story. And so I'm really enjoying kind of the chaos and the characters that they have on right now. So that's maybe my recommend to watch. Would you recommend that to people?
I would. I'm really enjoying it. I think it's probably closest. It's like a live action prequel to Batman the Animated Series. And I'm really enjoying that. That's the vein they're going with. You know, it's got a little bit of Tim Burton's influence and a little bit of Paul Dini's influence. And I'm enjoying how they're taking Gotham and they're playing it at just the right tone. Not campy, but it definitely lively. And so I like the flavor that it's going with. I like how insane a lot of the characters are. I don't know what they're doing with Barbara Gordon, but she's supposed to be Barbara Gordon, but instead of making her marry Jim, they made her a psycho killer like everybody else. So that it's been kind of cool to watch her develop, and I wonder where they're going with her. But yeah, it's the kind of show where you can tell the way things are going somewhere around season 7 or 8, Bruce Wayne is going to go, all right, I need to be Batman to clean this city up.
Yeah, and that's what I love is I've never been a huge Batman fan. I mean, I've enjoyed the movies, those that I've seen, but I've never been one of those people to say like, oh, I love Batman. However, the story here, I absolutely love it because it's Batman, but it's different. It's a different story than what I feel has been told any other time. But it kind of helps to fill in, or in one way, it's a potential fill in for all the other stories that you've seen. Oh, this is how we got there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I absolutely love that prequel element to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm gonna finish off pop culture with one bit of news that most everybody that's listened by now has heard. The Han Solo film to hit for Star Wars at the standalone that they're doing, they have now penned in their second star. If you didn't catch it, first of all, Han Solo being played by Alden Ehrenreich. I don't even know how to say that last name.
Ehrenreich.
But they just announced yesterday that Donald Glover will be playing the part of Lando Calrissian.
Having Lando in the morning.
I don't know if you saw that news. I don't know what your thoughts are on that one, John, but I'm not familiar enough. I know I've seen Donald Glover and things. I'm not familiar enough with him.
Oh, but... well, you have to watch Community.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Donald Glover is hilarious in Community. In fact, when he left Community, that's when the show just kind of fizzled and died. But I know him mainly from that. I know Amin El-Hassan is furious that it's Donald Glover because he said Donald Glover is incapable of being cool. He was in Magic Mike XXL and he played a cool character in that. So I do think he can pull it off.
Do you know what I like?
I also think, what do you like?
I was going to say, you know what I like about both of these choices is that you're picking guys who a lot of people may not think fit the mold, and that's okay. That's okay. Let them act it out on stage and see what happens.
Yeah, if they're going to do a prequel and you get these guys, if they're not instantly cool that you think about, and, you know, I mean, Han Solo and Lando Calrissian are two of the coolest characters ever made. They have to, like, own the room.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily think of that when you have these two actors, so maybe this movie will kind of show how they eventually became those guys.
Yeah, so maybe.
We'll see. I do like the choice, and I'm very curious to see how they interact with each other, because that's, I mean, your whole movie really hinges on that, so.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, fine with me.
So, well, there you have it. That's our news and week in pop culture. Let's go ahead and wrap it up. A great week of Jedi and Germs, finishing off another great episode as we kick off NBA week one. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for joining us. To find us, just check us out on blogtalkradio.com/JediAndGerms, Stitcher and iTunes, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter by the same name. Hit us up. Respond. Give us your thoughts on the show and on the subjects of tonight. We always love to hear it, and we always love the discussion points. So we'd love to hear from you, the listener. We enjoy it. And look for us again soon on next week on our next episode of Jedi and Germs. And when you get a minute, check out fanessentials.net. Great place to find NBA merchandise for your favorite team. Use Jedi and Germs at checkout for 30% off your first month. We love our friends over at Fan Essentials. Check them out. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.